East Moline moves into its next big phase of infrastructure work and regulating kratom, something many of us have never heard about in the cities. Kratom is an herbal supplement that is getting new scrutiny from lawmakers. We'll take a closer look with an addiction specialist. But first, a new East Moline. In his State of the City address, East Moline Mayor Reggie Freeman focused on downtown redevelopment and the city's multi-million dollar plans impacting its water supply. It could mean bigger bills for residents in the not too distant future. So we're joined by the City Administrator of East Moline, Mark Rothert. The mayor's state of the city really focused on a lot of the development that East Moline is already doing. I mean, particularly trying to get the Bend and downtown and that whole area coordinated as one.
Yes.
That's been a major goal over the last 2 years. What's the progress right now for 2026?
Yeah, so for 2026, we're doing a lot of, or we're finishing the construction on 15th Avenue and going from one end to the other. There's a lot of work done last year for that, but we're looking to finish that up this year with, you know, a whole new construction of roadway, sidewalk, festival infrastructure there to help for festival parties and events that we have throughout the year. And then also we're doing 12th Avenue as well to reconstruct that, to make that connection from the Bend to the downtown through the Rust Belt.
And that's been a major goal because the railroad tracks, but also because of the logistics of all three of those entities. How important is that? I think most cities don't realize that to link these three major things actually gives you more cohesion in East Moline.
It does. It creates a lot of mobility for people that are walking, riding their bikes, in vehicular traffic as well, to make it more user-friendly. And connecting those core commercial areas of our community is going to be vital for business growth, people and visitors coming to our community to see what we have to offer.
Well, and people who haven't been in East Moline for a while, I mean, you'll remember downtown as being kind of a depressed area. It had a lot of empty storefronts. And then you add Runners Park, and you see all of these buildings that are being renovated. It really is a bit of a transformation for East Moline.
Yeah, it truly is. And, you know, not only in the public infrastructure, but the city has taken a huge step through the leadership of the mayor and the council to create this program called our Business Improvement Grant, our big program, to funnel sales tax dollars from our business district into this grant program for small businesses, where they can get up to $50,000 through their application to the city to revitalize their storefronts, revitalize the interior of their facilities, to really transform it in addition to what's going on the outside in the street.
Well, because you also look at that core area, as you said, you know, the Bend, the Rust Belt, downtown, and then you have another core over on Avenue of the Cities.
Yeah.
That's also getting some major attention.
Yeah, definitely, too, because we don't want to forget the other commercial corridors of our community that are just as important as downtown and the Bend, right? Avenue of the Cities is a prime example where there's a lot of good mix of residential, commercial, and some other uses that we find very beneficial to our community that we want to improve and help grow.
But a lot of construction. I mean, people are going to have to be patient this year.
That is, you know, that's the growing pains of growth, right? You've got to go through construction. You've got to be rerouted. 12th Street, for example, today is going to be closed off in one way, one direction. So we understand those impacts that they have on our citizens as well as our business owners. And we want to be as most accommodating as possible by giving advance notice, providing alternative routes to reach these businesses, and be as accommodating as we can.
Each of the Illinois Quad Cities have one big issue, and that is the ability to expand. Annexation, very difficult in Illinois. And then you have, you know, Rock Island butted to Moline, butted to East Moline, butted to Hampton, and go all the way up the river.
Yeah.
So affordable housing and finding a way to increase housing is really difficult for each of the communities, including East Moline. And I want to talk about the Hoffman School.
Yeah.
Because you're looking at that. Metro Rock Housing Connection, acquiring it, trying to turn a school into affordable housing. How critically important is that for East Baltimore?
You know, affordable housing is just the missing one of those missing pieces in our housing stock that we need more of. But we have some of it, but maybe not enough, right, to meet the demand that's out there. And, you know, we've got a great partner in Metro Rock. You know, they're doing great things. They're going to be doing a huge, massive investment of their own assets over the next several years. And they're a great partner to work with. And in this aspect of creating affordable housing, you know, it's just another piece to the economic development puzzle to help provide another resource for our citizens that want to live, work, and recreate here in the community. And so we always need to look for ways to fill in those gaps, and affordable housing is one of those. The city's also looking at other vacant properties throughout the city that are sizable, you know, maybe 5 to 10 acres that we could also look to develop into more housing stock for the community.
Because you do have to look inside your city limits.
We do.
That's really the only place you can grow in some ways.
We are landlocked as well. Obviously, between Moline and Silvis, you know, we have some room to the north of Silvis going out east, but you know, that's, we are relatively landlocked, and so you've got to look inside to see how you can revitalize and rehabilitate homes, find parcels of land that could be reused for redevelopment of housing, and be creative.
Hoffman School must be very attractive, because not only is it creating something inside an existing neighborhood, but schools, of course, don't pay taxes.
So, I mean,
it's getting back on the tax roll.
Yeah, so there's an added benefit. Now, if Metro Rock develops it, there's also that piece of it is also a unit of local government. So, but there's also going to be ancillary development that includes retail and grocery stores and things of that like that will be spin-off developments that we wholeheartedly support and want in that area of town that is, you know, for the most part, been neglected as far as growth and development has been in the past.
You talked about expansion, that you do have some acreage in the east, and a lot of times that's been looked at for industrial development.
That's correct.
And I do also want to talk about the River Edge redevelopment zone. Mm-hmm. Tell me about how that can progress, that whole area, because by the interchange, real plans for East Moline.
Yeah, so the River Edge redevelopment zone is a state incentive provided through state legislation to East Moline, Moline, and Rock Island. And each of the three cities have applied separately to the state of Illinois for that designation, provides some incentives for business to grow. It is limited to 4,500 feet off of the river banks. So whether you're talking about the Mississippi River or the Rock River, there's potential there to provide that incentive. And it, you know, it's incentives for potential tax abatements if the local taxing districts support that. It's sales tax exemption on building materials, investment credits, and stuff like that. So there's real tools there that you can use for growth and development.
How do you think that's going to then be used?
Yeah,
for
so
East Moline?
One of the big things, incentives for that River's Edge, is a historic tax credit that can be utilized in conjunction with a federal historic tax credit. And so that's going to be huge for our downtown buildings and historic places that we have downtown. That's where I see the biggest benefit for us here locally.
Anything else as far as when it comes up to, because that's not going to be used, of course, for the industrial area.
Correct.
But what developments are you still hoping in that area?
Are we talking about I-80, 88?
Exactly.
Yeah. So in I-80, 88, that's an interesting site because it's been in a floodplain
right.
for a long time. It's been studied for the last 25, 30 years, and nothing's really been done. We've been fortunate to get a grant from the state of Illinois to do a study to determine its site readiness. And that study is almost complete, and we're going for another round of funding to do construction to get infrastructure, a sewer line out there to that I-88 site. The site has water already. It's got close electricity, so all it needs is sewer. So once we get the infrastructure there, it's going to open that site up for more development.
The whole idea is shovel ready, which
yes.
is what industries and businesses want, and we've seen that on the north side of Davenport in
yeah.
particular, and the success there.
Exactly.
You're thinking this could be just as
that could this could also
so to speak.
Be another spot. I think it's probably the best spot in Illinois because it's at the intersection of two interstates.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, there's so much traffic going through there that it's ideal for industrial commercial development at that location.
Does that include Quad City Downs? It's northeast of there, is it not?
So Quad City Downs is, I would say, just west of this location by
okay.
mile and a half. So the Quad City Downs is another site that is on our radar screen for future development as well. We don't know what exactly quite yet, but obviously it's a major piece of property that holds great potential with its proximity to the interstates and everything.
Let's talk about water bills because you've got major developments. It's been ongoing regarding the water treatment plant upgrades. About $42 million is slated for that. Work being done from 2027 all the way to 2032. Tell me why that water treatment plant upgrade's needed.
Yeah, well, certainly we've got really aging infrastructure. That plant was built in 1962. It's gone through a lot of, you know, wear and tear on different pieces of equipment that, you know, break from time to time. And, you know, we as a city found the need after doing a facility study, you know, having some consultants that are experts in that field of water treatment and facilities to look at what we had as infrastructure and what needed to be replaced. And so, you know, we've got clear wells and basins and just, you know, pumps and everything that just ages out and gets old and deteriorates. And, you know, we want to have safe drinking water for our residents, and it's incumbent upon us and our responsibility to make sure that that happens into the future. So we made a decision to look at investing at what those future improvements might look like going down the road in the next 5 to 10 years, and making, you know, improvements to the Clearwell immediately and other improvements as we go along. On the distribution side of it, the pipes going out into the community, there's a lot of lead that's out there that I know is a huge concern for many communities, and actually every community in the country is mandated by the federal government to do some lead service line replacement. And so that's a huge component of this upgrade as well too. We want to make sure that we have clean lines going to our residents, that they have safe drinking water. We've got about 6,800 lines in our community, service lines. About 2,000 of those are suspected lead service lines. So we've got a bit, you know, a third or, you know, a more to replace over the next 5 to 10 years.
One of the things that I was looking at, the bill that was projected, at least in some of the city council documents, looked like if you have a $47.64 bill now, it's going to increase to $79.57 by 2030. That's a sizable increase.
It is a sizable increase, and we are doing you know, massive upgrades to our water facility just to ensure that everyone has safe drinking water. Again, it's the lead service line replacements, it's the clarifier replacement as well that's deteriorating, and it's just making for a better utility that serves the public with safe drinking water. You know, we have to run our operations based on mandates from the federal government through the EPA, state EPA, as well as run it like a business, and effectively that our costs are covered by the rates that we charge. And, you know, things aren't cheap anymore, as we all know. And so producing water has a cost to it. And that's what we're seeing through these rates, to make sure and ensure that public has safe drinking water.
Have you heard from the public in regards to this rate increase?
You know, I'm sure
increase?
That the mayor and council members certainly have.
Right.
But also we get comments that people understand that we're doing what is best for the community as well, that we're ensuring public water is safe to drink, and it's safe for their kids, safe for their families. And so there is an understanding piece of that too.
2026. A lot of construction this year.
Yeah.
What's the major goal that you've got going on?
The growing pains is to get through the construction.
Absolutely.
To make sure to create these beautiful pieces of public infrastructure to help businesses grow in every part of the city, not just downtown or the Bend, but on the avenue and across into our industrial park. It's to leverage and position ourselves as a city that is ready for growth, aligning our incentives such as the River's Edge and Enterprise Zones and TIF districts and business districts so that we can be as effective when you come to the city of East Moline to do business, so that we can rival, in a way, in a friendly way, our friends over across the river.
Our thanks to East Moline City Administrator Mark Rothert. Just ahead, the dangers of kratom. Does this herbal supplement have more negatives than positives for those who use it? But first, we're entering the month of May with a new list of events that may interest you, your family, and your friends. Here's a look at some of the highlights, thanks to Visit Quad Cities.
Check out the things to do this week in the Quad Cities. Start your week off by checking out the Quad Cities River Bandits when they take on the Cedar Rapids Colonels. Next, grab your tickets for comedian Jeff Dunham as he takes the stage at Rhythm City Casino Resort. Then, get ready to gather with neighbors and friends at the Carriage House Bar every Friday night. Then, plan to join in on the fun at Putnam Palooza. Enjoy food trucks, crafts, live music, and family-friendly activities. Finally, get ready for the Taco and Margarita Festival. Enjoy over 100 local vendors, margarita flights, and delicious food. For more events like these, check out our events calendar at visitquadcities.com.
Some see kratom, an herbal substance, as a safe remedy for pains or even an effective way to get people off opioids. In Iowa and Illinois, it's still a legal supplement. Illinois restricts it to adults over 18, though some local communities have moved to ban it. In Iowa, for the most part, it's unregulated, but lawmakers have made moves that could see new restrictions put in place. So we want to know of the dangers of kratom, if any. Center for Alcohol and Drug Services, CADS, Program Director Kenan Neal joins us to talk about it. So tell me about this kratom, because, I mean, I mentioned it to people and they've never heard of it. On the other hand, you see it, if you're looking for it, you see it everywhere.
That's correct. Now, I will tell you that kratom comes from the origin of Southeast Asia. And with that being said, there's like 50 different strands throughout Southeast Asia. The strands I want to talk about today that I think are important are three different ones, and it deals with the maturity of the leaves, you know, and why people use kratom. With that being said, when you ask if it's been around, Southeast Asia, people typically use it as we use coffee, mm-hmm. you know, caffeine, social gatherings.
Because it's based off a leaf.
Correct.
It is a plant, leaf.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it is an herbal substance which gives the notion that it's healthy. But with the maturity of the leaves, we talked about the strands. You have three different ones out of that 50 deal with the maturity of the, let's say, kratom. So the white one is the least maturity. People will tend to use that for the stimulant-like effect, alertness. Mm-hmm. So some individuals who may be dealing with a mental health such as anxiety or depression may use that. Then you have the middle strain, which is green, I believe, would deal with mild pain relief. Because mm-hmm. kratom does act as an opiate-like or a stimulant-like with it attached to those receptors. So people will tend to use that one. Then the big concerning one is the red, which is more potent. And so think about it. You're using this substance to manage pain, but then you have the chance of building tolerance the more you use it. And then we end up in that substance use disorder type of thing. And so, I mean, to me, there's not enough out there information out there, but we do know, I could give you data as far as hospitalizations and things of that to show that I think it's a very dangerous substance. And I think the fact that it's not regulated.
Well, even the FDA doesn't really come out and say this is incredibly dangerous. They say it has no evidence of medicinal purpose. That's straight from the FDA, which is kind of their way of saying, don't use it, it ain't good.
Well, absolutely. When I think of FDA, and if I'm going to use this, well, it won't be a substance. Something has to be FDA approved. Because mm-hmm. I think FDA, the first thing that comes to mind is regulated.
If tested.
Tested. It works. You know, even things that we do within our prevention services are tested. We use words like evidence-based, you know, so you believe in it. You know that it works. So if it's not FDA approved, I'm not touching it.
No, but of course, I mean, this is available, like, at the counter of a quickie mart. It's at convenience stores, it's at smoke shops, it's at various places. And the people that do use it would say, hey, it works for me, and leave it at that. If it works for me, I need it.
Well, two different things I want to touch on. You're right. You see it everywhere, so it becomes the idea that it's okay, it's the norm. You said smoke shops, convenience stores, even some health places, and that herbal attachment, when you hear that. And the more you see it, the more you think it's the norm. And it does work, but we still don't know enough about it. When I say it works, I'm using it lightly, it will act as that opiate-like thing and alleviate pain. But there's a lot of time, we've had a history, remember Big Tobacco? Mm-hmm. And you know, we've had a history where things have been everywhere and it's promoted. I remember the old advertisements and such. Smoke one a day and, you know.
Or even 7 out of 10 doctors prefer, you
there
know,
you go.
XYZ
so,
cigarette.
But then
from the
we
50s.
Deal with later on, we see the repercussions.
The
all right, so.
Tell me a little bit about, because it's also been claimed that kratom is good and it does have opioid tendencies, I guess is what I want to say, but that it can be used to get people off of addictions.
No. So what I will say, it has those compounds made up, and I'm not a scientist, but I know it does have compounds made up that act as an opiate. Now, but study has also shown that individuals who have used it, to try to substitute getting off of an opiate have actually ended up developing, like I talked about, tolerance. So they use more of the substance, and then they tend to fall into that substance use disorder. I can tell you one interesting thing. If it's such a, let me see, if it acts as such a thing to help people with addiction, we've had, I think the CDC reported that within the last decade, I want to say like 1,200% increase of opiate-related incidents for hospitalizations. So right there, again, concerning, you know. So again, I might have to point out to you that many of the people who have used opiates actually are dealing with polysubstance, so they're using some illicit substance as well. Mm-hmm. So individuals go in there and they may use this. Not all individuals. I'm going to say some individuals may say, okay, I'm going to deal with this pain alleviation. I'm going to try to modify this. And they end up becoming addicted to it,
right,
or using some other substance.
Well, once again, you could see the appeal because it is herbal. So it's natural, so it can't have that much harm, and it's been around for, like you said, in Southeast Asia, it's been around for decades, if not centuries.
Well, let me ask you anything else. Do you know, can you name, I'm going to ask you, not as a quiz, put you
on
the
spot.
No, you're
going after me, I'm ready
for
this.
All right.
The table has turned on me, hasn't
it? Okay, so as far as herbal, can you name any other substance that are herbal?
Like,
do you think
tea? Herbal tea, is that where you're going at? Because that's has got a calming influence for a lot of people.
Actually, I'm talking about a substance that you wouldn't use.
Like you're thinking marijuana, leafy things such as that.
Right. So I mean, there's
poppy seeds.
There you go. Yeah. So my point is, like I said, I remember growing up in the 80s and people say, oh, it's marijuana, it's plant life, it's healthy.
It's hemp. It's
right.
It's,
and we do know today, and I'm not here to speak on marijuana, we do know that if people develop an addiction. We do know that. We do know that there's a lot of substance out there that may derive from some herbal thing that is not exactly healthy, you know. So
at CADS, at treatment centers, are you seeing an increased use and dependency of kratom? Because as you know, there's people in our society who've never even heard of it.
I will tell you this, what we're seeing is that there are some people within the treatment centers that are, like I said, that polysubstance, so they may report using kratom, but they're actually dealing with some other type of opiate or some other type of stimulant.
So it sounds like they're using something legal when it...
Right.
I see what you're saying.
It's kind of like you do screening services, or individual may share that, yeah, I've done kratom before, but they've actually talked about doing, maybe even drinking, mm-hmm, or doing some other heroin, you know, so... I've never seen anybody come and just say, I've used kratom alone.
You've seen that lawmakers are now putting some attention toward it. Last year in Illinois, they restricted it to adults 18 and over. In Iowa, they're looking at making it a substance that is more heavily regulated, like more hardcore drugs. Is it another thing also that lawmakers don't really know that much about it, and that you're having this patchwork of different states with different regulations?
Well, and I don't have those exact numbers, but I will tell you, now you said Illinois, and correct me if I'm wrong, they have a standard age for kratom?
Yeah, you have to be an adult. It was from last year.
And how about Iowa?
I don't know the law, but to the best of my knowledge, Iowa's unregulated.
Iowa is unregulated as far as law, but they do have a practice. Those people who decided, I think they have a practice at their discretion, 18 plus.
Generally, 21. It's an adult, yeah.
You know, again, not really too familiar with all the laws as it surrounds.
And they're changing.
I do know that, like you said, that you have some states where it's not regular, I mean, as far as the sales of who they sell to,
right.
I believe even online you could purchase kratom. So all those are dangerous, the mixed messages that we're sending.
Absolutely,
community.
Yeah.
We're all got to be on the same ship. But if everybody's on this ship, I mean, I think we've all seen Titanic, you know. And so, I mean, we're on this boat together and we have different people who have different perceptions. What is safe, what is not safe.
It also always boils down to, what do you tell parents? What should they be looking out for? Is there any signs or anything that would help parents better understand kratom?
I would think the best thing for parents to understand, or just people in general to understand kratom, drive around, go to those shops. If you're able to, do your own research, and you'll see a lot of the practice as far as the signage in there. the different things. I mean, how they come in different forms, making it more accessible, whether it's like, I think powder is the most commonly used form, but they even have shots that they refer to, capsules, all these things that make it invitable to make sure that we're touching every individual, you know, as far as route of the, what's the word I'm looking for? As far as how you're going to take that substance.
Oh, okay.
You know, because
right.
Think about it. When I go to the doctor, I don't like capsules. So I'm first thing I'm asking, do we have this in a liquid form or something that we could chew in? So they're making it easily accessible to individuals. But I would tell parents, not only be prepared, but also signs would be typical of that of anybody using any substance. Change of friends. You may not see the physical signs or smell that odor that somebody may use, like from smoking marijuana, but I would just pay attention. And most importantly, as a parent myself, just have the conversation. I would say explore with them. Ask them, are you familiar with this substance? Have you heard of it? What do you know about it? And do your own education, so.
Our thanks to Center for Alcohol and Drug Services, CADS, Program Director Kenan Neal. It took a spark to create this nation, and each of us has a spark that helps keep it going. As America gets ready to celebrate its 250th birthday, we're asking people in the cities about their civic spark. What made them get into the careers they chose, and how does it benefit all of us? We pose that question to Davenport School Superintendent T.J. Schneckloth. What is your civic spark?
I was in college. I was volunteering in a classroom. And I was reading a book to a third grade classroom. The teacher in the classroom literally grabbed me by my ear, took me over to her desk, dialed the number, said, you're gonna talk to a counselor. The counselor said, get over here right now, we'll change your major. I went down there, I changed my major to elementary education. And I can tell you, when I walked out of that building, I came alive. My career and everything about me had purpose. When I became a teacher and I became a principal, everything was about finding that little TJ Schneckloth that might need a little bit of help or a family that I could in some way help. And so that was the spark for me. And it was started with a tap on the shoulder. And that's why I think education is one of the greatest professions on the planet.
Our thanks to Davenport School Superintendent T.J. Schneckloth for sharing his civic spark. On the air, on the radio, on the web, on your mobile device, and streaming on your computer, thanks for taking some time to join us as we talk about the issues on the cities.